Rene Picard does a thing with her earlobe when she's starting to spiral. Rios sniffs a real cigar, and good guys never say they're good guys. Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Seventh Rule with Ciroc Lofton. He's a good guy, by the way.
Hello, hello. I would never say that.
My name is Ryan T. Husk, and today we're doing a review of Star Trek Picard Season 2, Episode 6, entitled Two of One, written by Cindy Appel and Jane Maggs. Is that what it was? Let me check on that. Directed by Jonathan Frakes. And of course, this entire season of Star Trek Picard is brought to you by our good buddy, Mr. Grandpa One, aka Tim Baum. How are you today, Tim Ciroc?
Doing good. Doing good. How about you?
Doing well. Doing well. I'm checking on that last
name
of the writer because I feel like my notes may have auto-corrected her last name. That's why when I read it, I was like, wait, that doesn't feel right to me. Let me check on that. But first things first, this was one of these fun kind of episodes, right? Where they're at a party, everybody's dressing up. I think what everybody's favorite thing was seeing Picard all dressed up and looking like an old cutie. But there were a lot of people, a lot of ladies that were saying they loved Agnes Girardi's dress. They were en fuego about it.
She looks good in red. She looks very good in red. And it was a beautiful dress. She rocked it. Give her a lot of credit for that. She was rocking that dress.
Yeah. Well, you being the wardrobe expert that you are, who do you think looked the best? Whose outfit or dress looked the most creative and interesting and radical?
I don't know about creative, but I would say that I do like her outfit behind you, the Laris's. Mm-hmm. She's not Laris in this.
Talon,
feature.
I believe it's Talon.
Yeah, these names are switching. They're killing me with the.
I know, that's what makes it so tough. It's the same person that we know, but yeah. They keep changing the character.
It's killing me because I'm like, even with every time I see Data, I'm like, okay, Data. Nope, not Data. Doctor. Nope, not that doctor. The other doctor.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's confusing seeing the same people playing not the same person. But yeah, I would say Dr. Girardi had the best outfit of the evening. She was sparkling. She's always so amazing. She plays all these emotions in her performances. Like you could tell when she's with Rafi, for example, with Rios, you know, there's that, you know, chemistry there. There's that history there.
They're great. They're great together. Yeah.
And they play it right. She acts a little uncomfortable and like, I want to do something, but I'm going to hold back. Until the Borg Queen's like, let me help you out.
I tried to share the screen that showed the writers, but I didn't. I guess it doesn't work on this. But it is. It was correct what I said. It wasn't an autocorrect or anything that changed. So those are the names of the writers. Let me pull them up again. It is Cindy Appel and Jane Maggs. Those are their names of the writers. I do love the chemistry between Dr. Girardi and Rios. They're so great. I mean, I just really love Alison Pill's acting. She's amazing. She's phenomenal. Apparently she can sing, right? Did you notice her singing?
And I was going to ask you if that was her singing because it was so good. I was like, did she sing that good too?
You know, there's been a lot of back and forth about that because my first thought, as soon as she started singing, I was like, oh, Yeah, of course that's her singing because, you know, Star Trek likes to show off. If one of their actors can sing, they like to give them that opportunity, whether it's Robert Picardo, whether it is Issa Briones, you know, whoever it is.
Nana Visitor,
Brent Spiner, right. So right. Never Aaron Eisenberg.
Well, there's a reason for that.
Yeah, or Sirach Lofton.
If you need a rap now, you can call me. I can do some rapping, but singing, no.
There we go.
Avery can sing. Avery's, right. You know, he's got a singing voice.
Right. So initially I thought that was her singing. I said, oh, okay, that's what they usually do. But then it looked like it was kind of off when she was walking. You know, obviously we know she's lip singing, but I was like, I don't know if this voice matches the face. Then I started thinking maybe she wasn't singing. Then I thought she was, because I was like, that would be so weird if they didn't, you know. So we've got a lot of back and forth. It feels like, and there was some conversation about it in the nerd groups last night. And it's the consensus seems to be that it was her, that it was in fact her.
Okay, because I did kind of think the same thing when I first heard it. I thought, was that the same voice? Is that her voice? And I know that when people sing, they usually use their singing voice, so it's not the same as a conversational tone. So you would see some difference. So I was trying to see, is that her singing or not? I, at some point, just let it go because I wasn't going to lose the moment, because obviously it was about that moment kind of being a distraction, also overcoming her inhibitions. I think that's one of the things that we're seeing with the Borg Queen's influence on Dr. Agnes, is that she's actually causing her to lose some of her inhibitions, right? She's like, don't be fearful. Don't do this, or, you know, don't be afraid. Here, let me help you.
Good point. It's almost as if they're trying to make it to where this Borg experience ends up being good for Agnes, or at the very least where we understand why Jurati is kind of falling into this thing, because she's feeling stronger with her. She's feeling more excited with her, you know, and somehow the Borg Queen kind of feasts off endorphins. I didn't quite fully understand that, but once the endorphins were released, she was able to get in more. So apparently Borg assimilate, you know, like the endorphins are like the gateway or something like that, where there's like it's closed and then the endorphins go rush them in. They're like, all right, everybody, we got endorphins. Come on in, nanites. Something like that. That was my understanding of it, at least.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like, you know, whatever adrenaline rush that you get when you're in these kinds of situations, either, you know, awkwardness because of love or feelings like she has with Rios, or fear of performing. You know, she just got on stage and just kind of performing gives you those kinds of adrenaline rush. So, yeah, I can see that as what they're trying to go for. And I like the relationship that Agnes is playing with the Borg Queen. So Agnes Allison Pill is so good at creating these different bonds with each character. So her character, her bond with the Borg Queen is different than her interaction with Rios and subsequently with Picard. So I think that she's so good at playing these subtle nuances in the relationships between people that she has. And I do like the back and forth between her and this Borg Queen. They're a good combo.
You know, I have a little bit of a conspiracy theory. I feel as though Jerry Ryan hardly had any lines in this episode. And I wonder if maybe she was sick. And I don't mean sick in a way where there was something contagious, but maybe she was recovering from something. So she had lost her voice or whatever it is, because she was present in all of these scenes, yet never had a line. You know, like it would always be between Rios and Raffi with Seven of Nine just sitting there giving a look or giving that look. And I wonder if maybe she did have lines and then for some reason she had lost her voice or something. So they kind of had to readjust it, because it was just strange to see her be the third person in every scene, but have no lines in it. And it wasn't like the lines were character specific, to where, of course, she can't be talking to the board queen because that's specifically Agnes. It was just people talking over what to do with Picard, you know, about his injury and stuff like that. So I wonder if there was something there to where she just, you know, they're like, okay, we got to cut her lines and give them to somebody else, but she can still be there. So maybe she wasn't sick. Maybe she just lost her voice. I don't know. It was just a thought because it seemed weird to have her there consistently, yet all the lines were shared between two people, Rafi and Rios, for example, and not her.
Yeah, and I thought it was weird at the cocktail party when she was over there. So there was the scene with Rafi and Rios at the bar, and actually I thought it was a great moment there where, you know, Rafi, first of all, they had a subtle, very brief moment where Rafi's at the bar and she's about to order a drink and she looks down at that bottle of whiskey, right? And that's a moment that people who are recovering alcoholics know very well. And I'm glad that they kind of slipped that in there because it is a real moment for people when they are making the conscious decision to abstain from drinking because they know the effects that it's had on their life. And the temptations of seeing, you know, a bottle here or alcohol or being invited to parties and people, you know, sharing drinks around, it's difficult for people to say no to those kinds of things. And I'm glad that they made a small moment there where Rafi says no to the demons, her prior demons, and says, you know, I'll just take a water. I thought that was just a small moment, but it means a lot to people who understand what it's like to deal with alcoholism.
And that's why she's my girl. Sorry, that's a Temptations. Because you said Temptations, and then my mind just got stuck on that.
Yeah. Talking about there my girl. Yeah. So
I guess we weren't talking about them. It was just my imagination. No. Please continue.
That's very good. That scene goes on forward to the Rafi Rios scene where they're both at the bar and Rafi calls Rios out saying, hey, something's wrong with you. I think, you know, you've got a little bounce in your step. You like that girl, right? The girl that we, a few reviews ago, said is going to be somebody that's, you know, more and more important in the storyline, right?
Teresa, right? Your girl's back.
Teresa.
She's back.
Yes.
And she was feeling feisty. I was like, all right, pal, I know Ciroc likes you, but I'm watching you because she was like, Rios, call me anytime, anything you need, whatever. Oh boy, you're so great. Come back. Anything you need, I swear, I promise. He comes back with a dying friend and she's like, you fucking dick. You woke me up out of bed. Like, what the hell is this? Well, you said anything you need, come back anytime. And he's got a dying friend and you're giving him a guilt trip about it. What did you think? Like, if that's not a time to call on a friend, what is? It wasn't like he was like, hey, I got a hangnail. Can you take care of it? She'd be like, you woke me up for that. No, his friend is dying, dude. Why are you giving shit for that? Anyway, I was just like, this lady, you're the one that offered.
Yeah, she's a feisty woman. And I'll tell you, when she turns it up and she turns her serious level up, everybody got quiet. And the moment I'm talking about is when, after she kind of gets Picard back a little bit, she stabilizes his signs. She says, everybody out.
Yeah.
And boy, the way she said it reminded me of just that sound. It's an ancient sound of it's time to get the hell out of here.
We have this lizard brain chemical that goes off that means don't say anything. Don't just no, don't say no, not that either. Nope. No, not even no, not even that. Just, yes.
Just go. Yeah, just go. And so that our primitive response skills were activated when I heard that. I was like, oh shoot, she's not playing. Like everybody kind of looked around, like, all right, let's get out of here.
Yeah, that's good.
So, but the scene I was bringing up, back to your point about Jerry Ryan not saying much in this episode. So in that scene, Rafi and Rios are talking and Rafi says, hey, you can't talk to a girl that's 500 years in the past. You know, it's your whole relationship will be built on a lie. Right. And she said, basically, we're all we got. And that made sense because they're all there together. They all know the deal. So they're going to be able to talk to each other. But then they look across the room and 7 of 9 is like having drinks and talking to who? Who is he talking to?
I love this. This is so funny. Yeah. This is what Thesaurok, now you're finally turning into a Star Trek nerd. This is the stuff that keeps us up late at night. It's like that meme of like, there's like a man and a woman in bed. And he's turned away from her and she's behind him going like, I bet he's thinking of another woman. And then it shows what he's thinking about. And he's like, well, how come the timeline's going to change if this guy talks to her? But then when 7 of 9, you know, like that's really what he's staying up thinking about. Cause that's what we do, man.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. I was like, who is she talking to? Like, when did they make friends at this party? Like, she doesn't know anybody in this timeline. She just walk up and say, hey, so did you see the Lakers last night? Like, what is she talking about? So just that whole like huddled in a conversation, having a toast, drinking a wine. I was thinking that doesn't make sense. They would be huddled together. They would be working on a scheme. You know, you cover that exit. You watch this door. They would be together working on some Ocean's 11 kind of, you know, Charlie's Angels. We're all in this together type moment. But it seemed weird. She was just off drinking and talking. Yeah. Yeah. It's so funny. No.
Sure, like, here's my number. Yeah.
Yeah, the whole world's about like the whole future is the timeline's going to be exterminated. Everybody's going to die. And you're over here just like laughing That's about funny. It. So well, I thought that was awkward.
Speaking of the Lakers too, 2024, I think they might be called the LA LeBrons, right? Because I think they might have 2 LeBrons on the team in a couple of years. So we'll see how that goes. There was another one of these nitpicky type moments that was keeping people up last week, which was, if you'll recall, when Rafi says, I think it was Rafi, she either said to Seven or Seven said to her, said, we can't beam Rios out of the bus because that'll mess up the timeline. Right. They're like, we can't beam him out of the bus. That's going to screw up the timeline, right? So then what do? They get phasers and blow the whole bus up, release 30 prisoners or whatever out. It's like, wait, yeah. Beaming him out cleanly, like just whoop, he's gone. What happened? I don't know. That's going to mess up the timeline or that, but all these, this other stuff won't, you know, all these guys are out running around, they're shooting people, they're blowing stuff up.
Yeah.
So that's what we're thinking about late at night. We're like, yeah, but I don't know.
Would that mess the timeline up?
But maybe not, because maybe it's just like a technological kind of thing.
Anyway. Well, they're still alive in a way. Yeah.
Yeah.
That
changes the timeline to 20 people that were supposed to be in one country have now been released in a different country. That's going to change a timeline. Totally.
Yeah. 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 I think that Elnor,
yeah,
Evan,
yeah,
has the best deals so far this season. He has been in every episode, but only for 1 second, and says absolutely nothing. So whoever his agent is, kudos, kudos.
Sirach wants that job. He's like, call me,
call me, hit me up if you need that. So yeah, he popped up in the episode for 1 second, you know, and boom, gone. I'm like, boy, that's the easiest day he's ever had to show up to work.
Yeah. And I thought they also did something that was very effective, which was the 34 minutes later, 26 minutes later, the little flash forwards, you know, which is how some movies are done. Sometimes we see these in movies. There's just like a movie that it says like this and this happened, and then they go 2 days prior and you're like, oh God. But this one was just an episode that employed that. Now I had to fight the urge to be that nitpicky guy and be like actually counting the minutes and being like, wait a minute, they said 14 minutes sooner and this much prior, but then the other one didn't count in the fact that like first it shows him dropping at this time, but then it shows him in the hospital. Wasn't there time that lapsed? So I'm like, don't do that, Ryan. Don't do it. I'm sure they've worked it out. You don't need to waste your brain energy on this. But I thought it was a very effective storytelling device, because it immediately makes us, interested to want to know what happened. We know that it's coming. We know we're going to see it in this particular episode. You know, it would be horrible if they did that. And then they're like, they show it again and they're like 2 minutes earlier and then credits. They'd be like, what? Come on, man. But they give us that payoff, which is great. That's great storytelling right there.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The only thing that I have a little bit of difficulty with is these flashbacks that they keep going back to in Picard's head with his mom and a little boy, him as a little boy or something like that.
I'm confused by that too. I don't really know where it's going.
Every time I go to that, I'm like, what does that mean exactly? Why do they keep throwing that in there? Because it literally has nothing to do with what we're trying to do right now.
That we think, but obviously that's all going to make sense. Q is going to make sense. Rene Picard's going to make sense. Dr. Soong is going to make sense. And Corey is going to, it's all going to come together. And they only have four episodes left to do it. So we know it's right. All going to start coalescing real soon.
Yeah, because I have several questions. And that's the other question, speaking of what a Star Trek fan thinks about at night. One of the things I keep thinking about is if Q is this all-powerful, omnipotent present that can be in any timeline, why does he need to enlist somebody else to do something for him?
I can tell you, I can answer that, I think, because I have stayed up late at night thinking about this. It's a couple things. It could be a combination or it could be either or. One is that Q has a history of doing this where he just likes to mess with Picard. He likes to teach him lessons. He likes to screw with him. He likes to put him like a rat in a maze. He was like, oh, Sisko, a new guy to mess with. And Sisko was like, nope. And he's like, okay, see ya. I'll go back to Picard. He's more fun. But he has a history of doing that. And Picard's much more tolerant about it. Picard doesn't punch him. He just goes, Q, damn it. What are you doing this time? Or whatever he does. And so it could just be Q being Q. That's just what he does. However, the hints they've given us in this season are that Q is losing his powers. They've used the word unwell when describing him, I believe. They said unwell, or I think it was unwell, but basically meaning he's sick. He's losing his powers. He's sick. So he's actually enlisting the help of Picard in some way for some reason, because he needs it, because he is no longer all. And then at one point in the first or second episode, I think it was second episode, he goes, and nothing happened. And he said, that's odd and very disconcerting or worrisome or something like that. So that tells us that we don't know exactly what the situation is with Q.
So he doesn't have all his powers.
Seems that way. Seems like he's losing his powers, or may not have any at all anymore at all.
Okay. Yeah, that's the part of me that says, well, why does he need to enlist Dr. Soong?
Yeah.
Why doesn't he just make the Picard girl vanish, or she just gets hit with a piano as she's walking down the street? I'm just saying, you know, if he has all this power, why does he need to have it done in this kind of way? But I guess that's part of the story, so I have to go along for the ride. And me and my, like, you know, I'm always like, come on, well, Q, what are you doing, man?
Q's always going to do that to you. Q's always going to make you say, like, what's going on? What's the situation? Why doesn't he just do this? His main thing is he never does the things that he should do. He always makes his toy. He treats humans like toys. He's just like, I want this thing to play out. So maybe he could still, you know, destroy this person or kill, you know, Renee himself, but maybe he needs Soong to do it because that'll create a chain of events that'll, you know, Soong will then do this or do that, you know, don't really right. know, but I'm sure they'll reveal it all, you know, in the next four episodes.
Yeah.
Now this was an episode. So this was maybe the shortest episode of these hour-long new Star Trek series, Picard and Discovery. It was so short. How short was it? It was so short that I actually watched the theme song, the main title sequence. Because, you know, I did it like the first couple episodes, but I'm like, okay, I get it. I want to skip ahead and just get to the show. But this time I was like, hey, it's only 38 minutes. I want to soak this up. I want to get some more Picard in. So I really soaked it up. I enjoyed it. I watched closely at the part where you see Q's big giant Q in the opening main title sequence, because somebody pointed that out online, that, you know, how when Q shows his business card, you know, whatever it was last season, last episode, I mean, there's like this, yeah. this digital looking Q in the main right. title sequence. There is that digital looking Q. So we've been seeing that for five episodes and did not even realize it was right in front of our faces. So that was a good catch by someone. Yeah. There were a lot of Easter eggs in this one too, really interesting ones. So
here's my rendition of that cue right there.
Hang on. Let me spotlight that. Here it comes. Oh, wait, I
from can't. From that episode.
Very nice.
You see it?
Oh, yeah.
It had the phone number on it and everything. 323-634-5667.
And you know, if you call that, it's actually, what's his name? John Delancey being Q and answering and leaving a voicemail and doing his thing. It's pretty funny. So give it a call.
Oh man, I'm going to call it up.
Yeah.
Say, where's my money?
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody online said that they actually called him back or did, you know, but we'll see. Who knows if that's true.
I have some nitpicks. Yeah. Well, first of all, one was the, inside of the bar scene when Rios is talking to Rafi, he's wearing that tuxedo behind you that you have pictured behind you. And in that scene, his microphone is going up through his shirt behind his tie. You know, they wire everybody with microphones when they're recording. But unfortunately, in this moment when he's kind of leaning, I could see the wire of the microphone.
No way.
It's just a technical glitch. But it's something that should be. It happens, but it's something that is normally looked after and try. They try to catch those things on the set as much as they can, sure. right? And to me, that was just it just slipped under the radar. So if you rewatch the episode, you'll see Rios's microphone underneath his tie.
I've seen little things like that before, where I've seen microphones. You know, like the wire. I've seen the wire. Pack. I've seen the pack in somebody's like. Pocket
right.
There was right. like in the first season of Discovery we saw that they had Saru's other shoes on, you know, because the camera apparently showed more than it was supposed to, you know, all kinds right. of little things like that, and those are great. That's not a negative nitpick. People love that right. stuff because it makes them feel like they're behind the scenes, like they're seeing a secret little thing, you know. The only one that really took me out of it was when I saw an original series episode. And I know people are stopping me right now saying, dude, if you're taken out by little minor tweaks in the original series episode, then you're going to have like 10 of those per episode. Cause those things like were imperfect. Let's just say they were very imperfect. And there was this one episode and I forgot which one it was, but everybody at home, it was when they're trying to get into, you know, through a door in the Enterprise, and Scotty is like cutting through, you know, the panel to get in to override the door to open, right?
I watched this episode.
Wow.
On the cruise. It was playing on the cruise.
No way. That was a coincidence. I love it. Which one? What was it?
I don't remember, but there was somebody in the room. They were trying to open the panel to get into the room. Mm-hmm. Somebody was in there.
Okay. So what happened?
It was this weird guy who had he was going around messing with different people and they tried to get him.
Sounds like Kirk.
I don't remember.
No, but but what happened? Anyway, I don't want to try to remember which one it was, but anyway, the thing that took me out of it was somebody clearly bumped the camera because the camera does like a move like this and it stops. And then all of a sudden it goes, right. And you hear somebody going, and I'm like, you didn't do a second take. Like the camera person didn't say, hey, the camera bumped. Yeah. And it was noticeably bumped. And he didn't say, hey, and I also made a noise. And the audio guy wasn't like, hey, I heard the camera guy. And the director wasn't like, hey, the camera. Nobody, they're like, ah, fuck it. Nobody's watching this. Nobody's going to be watching this 55 years from now. Who cares?
It's good enough. It's good enough.
I rewound it. I was like, what the? How is this? Anyway, that was fun though. So here are some fun little Easter eggs. Number one is they said at the party, they said Dr. Jemison is going to make a toast. That's obviously referencing Dr. Mae Jemison, who was also in The Next Generation. So now she was mentioned. So she appeared in a Star Trek episode and she was mentioned in another. So that's really cool for her.
That's cool. Yeah, very cool.
let's see. What else was there?
Picard got hit with a Tesla.
Oh, is that what it was, really?
It was a Tesla, right? It was.
I don't know why that's funny, but it is.
Yeah, nobody else mentioned that. I'm the only one that said that.
Picard, I don't know.
Picard got hit with the Tesla. It was. Yeah, when he saves Renee's life. In that moment when the car's coming.
So check this out. That's a good catch. I like that. So in the Picard Facebook group, George Mangrum points this out. Check this out, everybody. Remember when Rios was trying to come in and they said, oh, you're an 80-year-old heart surgeon. I don't know if I buy that or whatever. If you look closely,
right,
look at the surgeon's name, Carl Leonard Kelly. All three of those can be and probably are in reference to the original Bones character from the original Star Trek series, because his name was DeForest Kelly. So his last name was Kelly. The character's name was Leonard McCoy. And Carl is probably in reference to Carl Urban, who played Leonard McCoy in the JJ reboot movies, the Calvin Harris movies.
Wow.
So all three of those are, and he's a doctor.
Deep dive.
Yeah. And he's a doctor.
Deep dive.
Yeah. So that is a good catch there.
And DeForest Kelly was born in El Paso, Texas. So that's like a,
was he really?
No, I just threw
damn. I was wondering if 311 or El Paso, Texas were things too. I'm like, what do those mean?
I just threw that in there.
Let me see. So, Talon spoke Romulan for a second there. Just out of nowhere, she spoke Romulan. So if we're supposed to believe that she's not Laris, why did she speak Romulan?
And I'm glad you brought that up, because that leads me to my next point. In the scene in which Picard,
oh my God, you just totally took a Columbo tone right there. I can't believe it. You're like, you took a pause and you said, on the night of September 4th. That was so good. All right. I'm sorry for interrupting.
Please. But yeah, in that scene where Picard's in the hospital bed, he's being looked at by Laris with some kind of device that's looking at his brain pattern, brain waves, right? And she says, Laris, I can go inside of his mind. Something's going on in his mind. It's not his body. It's his mind. I'm going to use this device the same way I can go in, out. I can go in or something like that. Right. Yeah. And she says these words. It'll be something like a jerry-rigged mind meld. That was the words. Mm-hmm. A jerry-rigged mind meld. And my thing is, how does this character, who is not Laris, who is supposedly Talon, how does she know what a mind meld is?
Just do one more thing. Yeah,
Am I becoming overly nerdy about
stuff? No, this is exactly the stuff that we talk about when these episodes are dropped. Everybody, they're like, oh, I found this, I found that. And we start talking about this stuff. That's true. How would she know what a mind meld is? Well, I guess her race might know what the Vulcans are because she's some kind of alien race watcher thing. But I don't know, that there's going to be something that's probably going to be explained. You're right. I did get the answers possibly to the 311, the date on the thing. So okay. Check this out. This is in that group. Mangrum says, did anyone catch the Southern heart surgeon's name? There it is. And he says, wow, on March 11th, that's the date, 1964, that's the date, a draft proposal for a show called Star Trek was presented to MGM.
Wow.
And then down here, this is where some nerd named Ryan says, I think it's all McCoy references Leonard McCoy, because I think he originally was saying Leonard Nimoy. He was thinking it might be a reference to Leonard Nimoy, but it would make a little bit more sense if all three were Bones. But that's a good catch, Sirach. That's an interesting thing.
Yeah, it's one of the things that I caught. I thought Picard gave some pretty good moments. Like he's very good at these like motivational speaking, right? He's like, I don't like it so much when I hear it in Discovery, these aphorisms. But I do like it when he says it because of his style of delivery and the sentiment of, which I believe is somewhat genuine when he says these things. So, you know, when he was approaching Renee, he said to her, you know, she said, oh yeah, fear is just a confirmation of, you know, that I shouldn't be doing something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he just said, it just means that you're smart, that you're aware of the danger.
Right.
It's good sense.
Yeah. And I like those kinds of explanations that he gives. When Picard does those kinds of things, it is him imparting the wisdom that he has accumulated and accrued over the years and now giving it out. And I buy that. It sounds believable to me that somebody like Picard, who's had the experiences that he's had, is going to be able to put things in a perspective for some young person that makes it easy for them to digest and also to make a decision going forward.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. 10 forward, in fact, which is the shirt you're wearing right now. Awesome exactly. Shirt by Paramount Plus. Fantastic. Looks awesome. I want to take your point one step further and say that does sound like some good advice that he would give to someone younger. And I will submit, and everybody in the live chat can back me up on this, I think, but I can definitely hear Guinan saying that to Picard in The Next Generation. I'm not saying that she did. I'm saying I could definitely see that. It sounds like something Guinan would say, because that kind of wisdom is the kind of things that Guinan has imparted on Picard. So it's very possible that somewhere down the line, he's repeating something that Guinan said to him, you know, like in times of troubles, he might be like, but I feel fear, Guinan, or whatever, you know, whatever he says. That was not a good impression. Don't judge me on that one. And she said, you know, well, fear just means that you're smart, that you're aware of the dangers. Like when you were, I didn't notice it when he said it, but when you were saying it, I was like, you know what? That sounds like something Guinan would have said to Picard on the Enterprise back in the day when she was giving out good advice like candy.
Yeah, something that he's now enabled to impart to somebody else. And I love the way he did it. You know, fear is fear, you know, You know, it's just, you know, it's don't let it stop you, you know?
Right.
And clearly it hasn't stopped yet.
We only have a couple minutes left, actually, but very quickly, a few things. Dr. Anne-Marie Siegel asks, is Picard's security guard LARPing name tag P. Trotter an Easter egg? I thought the same thing. It said P. Trotter. We know it must mean something. It must be a reference to Next Generation grip, you know, or a writer, or maybe the Picard name was originally going to be called Trotter. Who knows? If anybody knows what that Easter egg signifies, let us know, because I'm not aware of it, and I don't know anybody that is. And our good buddy Don Crandall sent a bunch of stuff in. Let's take a quick look at this. He says, definitely not going to share that one. So Corey is an augment, which is something we kind of guessed may be the case, but now we know for sure. Adam Soong is creating augments, just like his descendant, Eric Soong, who is also played by Brent Spiner. And this was in a three-part episode for Star Trek Enterprise. I believe it was a three-parter. He also mentions that Bashir could also be considered an augment, but he was called enhanced, not really genetically engineered. So who knows? Something that was interesting was he says a great Easter egg at the space exhibit, the Nomad display. So that's something here. Let me just show what that looked like at some point here. There was Nomad here in the corner. So what that signifies is that in which one was it? Right. It was Nomad is the original series villain, a sentient machine made from an ancient Earth space probe. The idea was similar to V'ger in Star Trek, the motion picture. I thought there was more to this. But anyway, so there are a lot of these deep cuts. Oh, somebody else pointed out, and it looks like Don also caught this as well, is that this ship that they were talking about that was called like Spike. Remember, she was saying, oh, I call that ship Spike. Renee was saying that.
Yeah.
That is a ship that was always seen in the Enterprise main title sequence. I did not catch that. But that's a deep cut. So in the main title sequence for Enterprise, there's this shuttle that we see. And that was the ship that she was talking about there.
The shuttle was called Spike. Mm-hmm. Well, Don Crandall, man, he always goes where Nomad has gone before.
Nomad. Very nice. Here's the shuttle. it looks like so somebody put it together. I don't know if that was Don that did or if he just shared it. But this is from Enterprise. It looks like from the opening theme. You can see like the writing of the opening title theme. And this was it later on. It's pretty cool. Looks great. Anyway. So yeah, even on these episodes that are shorter and they mostly mostly take place in one place and it doesn't seem like there's much going on. They drop in all these little Easter eggs for us nerds to enjoy. So what I'm trying to say is that we'd like to give a very special thanks to Homer Frizzell in Walter Koenig's former apartment building in New York, Dr. Anne-Marie Siegel, also in New York, Eve England out in Wales, Yvette Blackman, Tom Carmen, a.k.a. Skillet Grandpa One, a.k.a. Timothy Baum, TJ Jackson Bay out in Missouri, Bill Victor Arukin.
Arukin.
There was a lot of power in that one. Our good friend, Titus Moeller, Darlena Marie, John Mann, Dr. Muhammad Noor, Tierney C. Diekman, Anna Post, Rex A. Wood, Anil O. Palat, Dr. Frank Sobozhensky, Patrick David Lindsley, Joe Balsarati, and of course, Dr. Susan V. Gruner. This was a fun one. We have four to go, and then it's all going to come together.
It's all come together. Nice. I can't wait. Make it happen. I hope they don't hurt Dr. Agnes because she's got to deal with this Borg thing, and they can't kill her because she's too good.
she's the one that's going to get him back, or maybe she's going to end up becoming the Borg queen that they see in the future.
I think that might be where I'm thinking she's going to be the Borg queen. And she'll be great at it.
Do you think they're going to hurt your girl, Teresa?
They better not lay a finger on Teresa. I know.
That's what I'm saying. You're going to find them. You'll find them if they do.
I'll be looking for it. Me and Rios together. We'll tag them.
All right. Well, everybody at home, thank you so much for joining us. It's been fun. It's been real. It hasn't been real fun, but no, it's been real fun too. Thank you all very much. And we'll see you next time. Until then, always remember the seventh rule.